pledge allegiance. And Mr. Chambers, would you like to lead us?
Sure.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Yes. Commissioner Church?
Here.
Commissioner Richardson?
Here.
Commissioner Goodwin?
Here.
Commissioner Chambers?
Here.
Commissioner DeSimone?
Here.
Commissioner Wright?
Here.
Commissioner Gardner?
Here. All right, we do have a quorum tonight, so we will proceed. This is a continuation of the land use hearing from last week, October 31st. The matter that we are hearing is a text amendment to the Justine County Rural Land Development Code. If approved, the decision will allow changes to the Rural Land Development Code to grant growth marijuana in the residential zone. Other text amendments proposed help address land use conflicts that have arisen as a result of marijuana industry in Justine County, including fencing, plant location, oversight, building size and overcrowding, odor, lights, waste management, noise, camping, runoff, and citation authority. And this is, we're now about to have a deliberation and motion. From the hearing held last week, public testimony is closed. We will not be taking any public testimony or comment tonight. The first order of business, this meeting is now called to order. And each commissioner must state a finding and the reason why. Before we get there, there are two commissioners who were not present last week, so I would like to ask if anybody would like to abstain from deliberations.
Commissioner Stone will be abstaining for not being present last week.
And Commissioner Wright will also abstain because he did not have time to catch the video.
Great. All right. Then shall we start with Commissioner Gardner? Please present your findings and your reasons why.
Thank you. I have found, as I wrote in my comments last week, a great deal of value in the proposed code change. In particular, I think that it's very wise for the rural county to consider regulating impervious surface and to perhaps do a better job of looking at lighting in the county to make sure that it serves the needs of our rural community. I, too, have a lot of concerns about the impacts of marijuana grows on residential zones. I have even greater concern about the way in which the marijuana industry is developing in our county. So I have submitted to the Planning Commission, and I have some more copies here. I also handed it out last week. I'm asking for our county to see the difference, to understand the difference between marijuana and cannabis. We have a tremendous confusion on this point right now. Did everyone receive that? It was a two-page article. I meant to hand it to you last week. I have more copies if you'd like it. I'd like for us to really look at the facts of our American history. And to do that, I wanted to point out, I'll be happy to provide a copy for anyone here who'd like to see this, that the facts are that cannabis is medicine. And I've created this graphic to help communicate this, to understand that the word cannabis, the modern Latin name for this, that's recognized by the International Congress, that is worldwide, the name for this plant is cannabis. And this name, our modern Latin name, is derived from the ancient Hebrew. Hebrew scholars from Hebrew Jerusalem, University in Jerusalem, agree that this name, Kanebosum, is the closest approximate translation for the ancient Hebrew name.
Point of order.
Yes.
Right now we're supposed to be discussing our findings specifically related to the proposed text amendment.
I'm on track. I'm almost done, believe it or not.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. So I also want to point out that cannabis is recognized as medicine by the U.S. Pharmacopoeia for 75 years, 1851 to 1926. So I'm offering this really to our community to help us understand that marijuana is about 79 years old. It was started in 1937 by an act of Congress. And we are in a historic position to see the difference and to begin to recognize that our county is famous for our organic cannabis production as medicine. For that reason, I'm very interested in minimizing the impacts of this recreational industry. And I'm very supportive of what I believe this code amendment is attempting to do. But I have a lot of concerns about the way it's being done. I am very supportive of it. But I don't know that the code change is the right way to accomplish this. So I feel that we've heard a lot of concerns from our community, from different sectors of our community, those concerned about protecting our cannabis industry, who are still struggling with the difference between cannabis and marijuana, or recreational marijuana and medical cannabis. So I'd like to invite our community to begin to look to see if we can't really understand what it is we're trying to regulate. And I believe there may be great tools at our disposal to do this. My finding is I would like to have our commission recommend to the Board of County Commissioners not to take action at this time. Only because I feel that I want to use the word inflammatory to the private property rights citizens who may even agree with our objectives. I think that there's a lot of power in our recognizing the organic cannabis industry that lays the golden egg every year. And so I would like to ask our Planning Commission to begin engaging, perhaps partner with the Illinois Valley Community Development Organization, because we've done a strategic plan doing outreach to ask people in the county, what matters to you? What do you value most? Where do you see room for improvement? And I would much rather see us take a pro-medicine approach in that way. So my recommendation to the commission, with all respect, would be not to move this forward as a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners at this time.
Thank you, Commissioner Garner. Commissioner Richardson?
I suppose we need to use these. Pass it on. Can you hear it? It's green. I don't know that if it's working or not.
Can people hear, Commissioner? Does it make any difference?
Yeah.
Is that something?
Okay. I took a more, I guess, legalistic approach in looking at my findings because I think what was covered in the beginning was specifically two things from the Oregon State. That was goal 8 on pollution control, in that we have to have control over pollution in our county, and goal 10 that says we have to have planned and organized development. There were some things in here that I think are very important. The Community Action Group from Williams, I find that that is a meaningful thing, that we need to support it. That's also a goal. And probably we should be talking to other people to encourage Merlin and Kirby and some of the other places to form their Community Action Groups. Because I think a lot of the problems could be solved if people start talking to one another. What was obvious to me is we have a group that's kind of like the gold rush. Suddenly marijuana, cannabis is legal and they're in a rush to make a profit and start growing and have an agricultural product. Then there are their neighbors who are flatly terrified. They are terrified of the transients, the guns, the dogs, all their history of marijuana, you name it, they're afraid of it. And legislating it is probably what we're trying to do, is to walk a fine line between the two groups, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't be talking to one another. So I think a lot of this could be overcome if neighbors would talk to neighbors. That being said, I focus on whether or not the things that were proposed would actually solve the problems that they're meant to address. For example, what good does requiring a house on the rural residential accomplish? It is an additional expenditure, but is the house ever going to be used for anything? And I heard something about 40,000 square feet under canopy for cannabis, if you want to call it that. 40,000 square feet is an acre. So if we have an acre out of 2.5 that's in full grow, that's a commercial enterprise in a rural residential area. We're going to address it. There's some waivers and some things that we can do, but I'm not sure that noise abatement is fans for the smell. We're at the infancy. There are marijuana strains that smell less than others. Perhaps if we need to encourage the development of strains that minimize the odor. But what I came down to was fundamentally is from 61.050 was criteria for farm use in a rural residential area. That's from the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code. And I looked at it and it says farm uses in the rural residential zone shall meet the following provisions. It means they must. It's not they may or it's possible they could go anyway. It says farm uses shall not interfere with the use of adjoining residential properties. And I submit to you that permitting marijuana to grow in rural residential from 1 acre through 5 is in fact interfering with the use of adjoining residential properties until we have the smell under control, the fencing under control, everything that's reasonable and prudent. Because we also have two different kinds of rural development. We have the rural development that's like where I live, that's adjacent to the city of Grants Pass. We don't consider ourselves rural, we just live on acreage. There are parts of the county that are truly rural who have their farms and their other things. We expect vastly different things from our government. And one of the things that we don't expect is to find a commercial enterprise next to our rural home. And for many of us, those rural homes are a significant source of our retirement, of our legacy to our children, and we are terrified that something will happen that will cause that value to be diminished. Until we can work that out, the next thing it says that farm uses shall not constitute a sanitation or health hazard. We have tried to make provisions to minimize the sanitation, minimize the health hazard, require people to do something instead of putting in a sewer or a septic system. But what if it doesn't work? We're not given an option. It says we shall not. And so frankly, I think that the whole premise behind rural residential is fundamentally a disconnect between commercial and marijuana. That is not to say that people can't grow for medicinal, they can't be grandfathered, because they already are, and you can't have a little recreational pot plant in your backyard. But when you're talking about an acre under grow on a 2.5 acre plot, and I have 2.75 acres, you're almost 50% of that lot. There's no room for anything else. So my finding is it does not comply with our own rural land development code.
Thank you, Commissioner Zinko. Commissioner Church?
Yes, thank you. Yes, you can hear me. I hear it. I'll hold it really closer. My sense is, and I will try not to be redundant on some points here, but I did write up several findings. I essentially also do believe, not also, but do believe that the text amendments should be postponed for a while. And I'm going to kind of read my findings that I drafted out here. I first found that the cultivation of marijuana plants is generally legal in the state of Oregon, subject to ORS 614 and the applicable OAR 845 from the State Liquor Control Commission. After listening to all the testimony last week and being around here for a while, I find there's no demonstrated reason why the cultivation and production of marijuana plants should be considered any different, in my opinion, than the cultivation of any other agricultural product. In one way or another, all such products generally have some positive and some negative impacts on the environment. I find that Josephine County has in place a rural land development code that currently adequately regulates agriculture production in rural residential zones as well as in farm and resource zones. I find that the economy of Josephine County will benefit greatly from the growing of marijuana as an agricultural product. One of my favorites here in regard to OLCC Rule 845-025-147-OC, which requires an 8-foot side obscuring fence around marijuana grow sites. I think that is the most ridiculous rule that was ever perpetrated on us. And I find that Josephine County should not perpetuate or legitimize this onerous rule by creating more regulations to work with. We should leave it alone and hope that common sense prevails somewhere there up in Salem. I further find that the best solution is to let individual growers choose the type and style fencing, if any, that best fits their needs. The current RLDC and state and county building codes adequately regulate fencing and fence setbacks as they are written in the code. In regard to camping, I don't know about camping. Camping, in my opinion, trying to regulate camping is an exercise in futility. And I generally don't believe that we should make rules that are not enforceable. I also believe there's no good reason to regulate odors from either indoor or outdoor growing of marijuana. Those odors are no different from dairy farms, dairy barns, horse barns, pastures, or even pig farms. They all have, if you live in a rural residential area, you bought into that knowing that those kinds of things can happen, and they are all currently allowed in the rural residential code. I don't find that setbacks for marijuana plants need to be any different from any other type of crop. The existing setbacks in Article 72 are adequate. I find that the code enforcement part of the RLDC should not be any different than is currently in the code. I see no reason to change that just for marijuana. In regard to the Williams area overlay, I don't find any compelling reason to create a Williams area overlay just for that particular CAC. If those rules are needed for the population of the Williams area, then they should also be applied equitably to all citizens of Josephine County, not just to the people who live in the Williams area. There should be no special treatment for a specific area group of people in that county. In regard to lighting in Article 75, there is a clause in Article 75 that does currently protect neighbors and the night sky. I believe and find that it is adequate. I think the new regulations proposed would be almost impossible to enforce. And lastly, the one thing that I did find positive about the whole thing, I think the erosion control regulations in Article 83 are in the best interest of the county to protect rivers and streams from excessive soil runoff. And maybe if there's a motion that just includes that text amendment in the, because that applies to the entire county, not just marijuana, I could probably be supportive of that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Commissioner Cook. Commissioner Chambers?
Am I on? Can you hear me all right? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, first, I don't like regulation. And no one I know likes regulation. Or if they do, they don't tell me about it. The prospectors who wandered into these valleys 160 years ago did not like regulation. But they found gold and the rush was on. Elbows rubbed elbows, and they had to form mining districts to establish boundaries, settle disputes, make life regulated. In a perfect world, disputes and regulation would not be necessary. Each person would take care of him or herself and not annoy the neighbors. But we do not live in a perfect world, as James Madison famously wrote, if men weren't angels, no government would be necessary. Most people do not require regulation most of the time, giving us the saying attributed to Thomas Jefferson, that government is best which governs least. It is a balancing act to find the sweet spot that allows maximum freedom without infringing on the freedom of your neighbor. Considering the 43 people who signed up to testify at the hearing last week, some asking for no regulation, others hoping for regulation, we have not found the sweet spot yet. Measure 91 and prohibition. A few people made comment that the proposed regulations are a prohibition and not in keeping with the intent of Measure 91. Prohibition is a gradient scale from total prohibition, so-called zero tolerance, to, on the other hand, total license, anything goes. We are all somewhere on that sliding scale. We think some things should be prohibited, but not others. And as was mentioned in the testimony, Measure 91 prohibits some things. Measure 91 was passed under the slogan that marijuana will be taxed and regulated, quote, like alcohol. When alcohol prohibition was repealed in 1933, alcohol became the most heavily regulated industry in the nation. Measure 91 assumes taxation and regulation. Regulation is very much within the intent of Measure 91. State regulation. It was frequently mentioned that the state is still trying to figure out who is regulating what and how much. The logical conclusion was to wait until state regulation settles before regulating for the county, because we don't want to be chasing our regulatory tails. Yes, state regulation is and will be in flux, and it will probably be for years. But while Salem dithers, do we need to sit on our hands waiting for big government to tell us what to do? We can look at our community and say, this is the way we want to grow. If or when Salem changes, if it affects us, then we can change or we can fight it. But for us to do nothing because we do not have direction from a distant legislature, I disagree. Generally, the more local the control, the better the government. Education, and this is something that Commissioner Gardner mentioned, the greater need for education. The following chart, or the chart that is now on the overhead, shows groups of cannabis compounds, CBDs, THCs, and so on, and the conditions they alleviate. I think it's illegal to say cure, but we can say alleviate. Significant testimony was spent on attempting to educate the commissioners on cannabis. I'm surprised that no one used this chart. The first time I saw this chart was at my doctor's office, a routine checkup, about 4 years ago, maybe five. His wife had seizures, and since she had started using cannabis, they had alleviated. He recommended cannabis to many of his patients. My doctor schooled me on the curative properties of cannabis and its limitations. I studied the modern research to verify his explanations and even delved into Ayurveda, the ancient lore. We are all, each of us, constantly learning. I have no problem with curative cannabis. And I say curative cannabis rather than medical marijuana for a reason. The pharmaceutical industry has given us two forms of medicine, curative and analgesic. The pharmaceutical industry produces both and calls them both medicine, which is a very smart marketing tactic. Curative agents help the body repair itself. Analgesic agents impair an unwanted perception, often by mimicking a brain chemical which fools the person into thinking all is well. As an example only, and this is only for example, one of the earliest analgesics of modern pharmacology was morphine, a godsend to the battlefield, but addictive. When wounded veterans, the story goes, returned home from Germany.
Commissioner, as I mentioned to Commissioner Gardner earlier, we're here to address findings related to this text amendment, not the history of medicinal property.
Actually,
of cannabis.
The nature of cannabis and marijuana very much relates to what my findings are.
Can you summarize it and then get on to your findings, please? I don't mean to cut you off. I just said, can you? This seems like a lengthy history, and if you could condense it a little bit. Related specifically to your findings. Thank you.
Specifically to the findings, I need people to understand somewhat how addiction occurs, because it does have some relation to this.
Okay.
All right. I'll just cut to it. We'll go to a new industry. Tobacco and alcohol were also once new industries and provided prosperity in their areas. There are tens of thousands of acres of agricultural, and since the last hearing of this commission, industrial land available for cultivation and processing. We will have a huge weed industry here, whether it is allowed on rural residential or not. The value of using rural residential to build a cottage industry is that huge capital is not required. A detriment is that rural residential should be residential, allowing for increased population. I do not want rural residential to become huge swaths of ag land, whether for vineyards, lavender, hemp, or marijuana. Therefore, I would like the word adjacent added to the proposed section 61.050E so that the relevant text would say this requirement can be waived provided one of the adjacent lots of the landowner is there. In the alternative, I'd like to see a cap on what one licensee can grow on rural residential. If he is big enough to use agriculture-sized acreage, he is going to squeeze out the cottage industry, and he should be himself be on ag land. Good neighbors. It was mentioned that only 100 complaints have been received, and with 80,000 people in Josephine County, only 1.14% of the people have complained. 80% is too large a pool. The more correct pool is those living in rural residential, and really the correct pool is those who have who are near a grow, neighbors to the grow. There might be 250 grows on rural residential right now. Each one has four neighbors, that's 1,000 neighbors. 100 complaints is 10%, but that's only a guess. I live on rural residential, and my neighbor has a car repair business, which he sometimes practices with gusto at 3 o'clock in the morning. The right to do business should be balanced with the right of neighbors to have a good night's sleep. Neighbors on rural residential property who are there prior to any grow, I really should have, I think, a say in the matter. We're going to talk about odor for just a moment. My wife and I were driving to Williams to visit family, and I caught the whiff of a marijuana in a field somewhere nearby. My wife said, "What was that?" And before I could answer, she said, "It smells like somebody ran over a spoon." I didn't mind the smell. She did. Here we have neighbors rubbing elbows. So does the person who smells skunk need to be a good neighbor and not complain? Or should the grower abate the odor? We have to find the sweet spot. The proposed regulation at section 72.060 D seems reasonable. Lighting, nobody talked about lighting. Fences and setbacks, in order to have this make any sense at all, you have to understand addiction. Black market, overregulation is a concern. One comment mentioned, overregulation would create a black market. I agree. No one mentioned, however, the equally disturbing prospect that overregulation will squeeze out smaller businesses because only the large ones can afford to comply. Regulations need to be easily followed. When permits are required, the procedures need to be efficient, simple, and inexpensive. Code enforcement. There was much talk about the enforcement provisions of the proposed amendment, which is for everything. It's not just marijuana, it's everything. That these proposed amendments would be, quote, the same as those four ordinances that no one liked. The proposed enforcement mechanism is, one, warnings, and if the person ignores them, two, a citation and fine, and if the person ignores those, three, it's referred to county legal counsel. The only thing he can do is take it to state court. This is about as benign as you can get. Some mention was made about rogue code enforcement officers trampling on property and civil rights, violating the Constitution. To be certified as a code enforcement professional, the training includes, along with a special section on following the Constitution, the following from the training manual: civil rights and liability. This develops necessary knowledge and helps understand federal law regarding civil rights violations, and especially how this applies to code enforcement, develops an understanding of what actions or lack of actions can lead to civil litigation against a code enforcement officer. The translation is, if a code enforcement officer tramples on you, you can sue him, he can lose his job, and he can lose his pension. The Community Advisory Committee, the more local the control, the better the government, as I mentioned before, so I agree with that should go forward. My conclusion was to have these go through with the possible restrictions on total acreage.
Thank you, Commissioner Chambers. Before I get my actual findings, I would like to thank Julie Schmelzer, our Community Development Director. She put a lot of work into this, which is evident in the fact that most of these proposed text amendments are simply extensions of the existing code in that area for what already exists, and that they are consistent with the existing code, just applying it to marijuana. And I also think that this has been the most transparent and community-engaged effort on the planning department since I've lived here, and I would love to see that degree of transparency and community involvement at all levels of government. So I'd like to thank you very much for doing this. A couple of people last week requested that we separate out the Williams CAC text amendments from the rest because they're not specific to marijuana. They're much broader in scope. And I think that's a good idea to separate that out. But because those text amendments were delivered late, they were not published in the proposed text amendments on the web, so most people weren't aware of them. So I think it would probably be a good idea to hold a separate hearing on the CAC text amendments so that everybody who wants to speak in favor of, or if anybody should want to speak opposed to them, I have no idea. So I would like to give the public that opportunity. So I would like to separate those out and have a separate hearing on that. Likewise, with the code enforcement, I understand that this code enforcement text amendment is much narrower in scope than the ordinance that was repealed by 80% of the voters a couple of years ago, and that there are also some code enforcement code still on the books when the code was all codified and put together that I'm not sure anybody really knows what those are. So I think it would also make sense to have a separate hearing on code enforcement so that people who are concerned about that can see what exists today and what the new proposal is and how that's different, and then give comment on that as a separate issue, because that is not specific to marijuana. So I would like to recommend that we separate out those two text amendments and hold a separate hearing for both of those that can be publicly noticed. I am a strong believer in property rights. I believe that everybody should have the right to do whatever they want to do on their own property as long as it doesn't infringe on the rights of other people. Unfortunately, we've had a number of instances of people infringing on the rights of other people. Most of the growers have been very responsible. If all the growers had been responsible and considerate of their neighbors, then you know, none of this would even be necessary because there wouldn't be a lot of complaints. But I think that we need to protect the rights of property owners, both the growers and the neighbors. They're all property owners. And because people's rights have been infringed on, then I think that it is necessary to have some sort of regulation. I look on realtor.com to keep track of property values, and I saw a really good deal, you know, a few months ago, and we actually drove out there to take a look at it. I mean, it was great. It was this house that was built 20 years ago and the same owner of all that time, well-maintained, nice neighborhood. We drove over there. The first thing we saw was the marijuana grow next to it with the black visqueen tarping all along the fence line, the signs warning of dogs, a dilapidated mobile home in the front yard with junk and trash everywhere. Obviously, the people who were staying there were not homeowners. They were caretakers who were not taken care of properly, just the plant. And so the neighbor who had owned their property for 20 years, built that house, lived there, taking care of it, was actually, had the neighbors from hell come there and had to actually sell their home at a vastly reduced property value. Now, property values have gone up because of marijuana, but unfortunately, some property values have also gone down. And that's why I think it is fair to look at some kind of regulation on this to protect the rights of all property owners. Marijuana is legal in this state, and it has the potential to contribute a great deal to our economy. And some people last week spoke of any restrictions on growing marijuana as prohibition. Well, prohibition is what we had for the last 100 years. Prohibition means you can't grow it. Under these amendments, and I'm not sure that everybody who spoke actually has read all of these amendments. I think that they're a lot more benign than some people suspect. The restrictions here, anybody on any rural land can grow marijuana for personal use. If on any land greater than 2.5 acres, you can have a commercial grow. And that is not prohibition. Prohibition means it's illegal everywhere, and this is not that. Unfortunately, we still have prohibition in the rest of the country, which I think is part of what causes some of the security issues and fear of people that they're, you know, that people have to have guns and dogs to protect their pot because of crime coming in, because this is still a black market product, and black market products always attract crime because the profits are so high, and also because the banks won't, you can't put the money in the bank, so people assume there's a lot of money lying around. So the neighbors' concerns about crime and security and dogs and you know, there is some validity there, and I am looking forward to the day when marijuana is legal throughout the country, and we won't be one of those target areas for people come to seek out pot to steal or whatever. But right now, there are still security concerns that people have. Then again, there were people last week who said that they want us to take the same line as Jackson County, where you cannot grow any marijuana on any rural residential property. And the fact is that we have in our code today that agriculture is a permitted use on rural residential land. And the state of Oregon has ruled that marijuana is an agricultural crop. So I think that it is entirely in keeping with our current code to allow marijuana on rural residential land, that land greater than 2.5 acres doesn't have, it's larger, land smaller than 2.5 acres, you have neighbors closer together, there's population density, and it really is more impactful on more neighbors if you have a commercial size growing operation there. But again, most, as we saw last week, most of the applications for recreational grows are in rural residential land. And when asked why, the grower said, because I can't afford to buy 80 acres of land. Because of our state land use regulations, on farm or forest land, you know, you can't divide it less than 80 acres. And because of that, people who wanted to grow, to do agriculture on less than 80 acres, they have very little option except for rural residential land. And it is a permitted use there. So I think that Planning Director Schmelzer has done a really good job of being fair and objective and trying to protect the property rights of both the growers and the residents by restricting commercial growers on lots that are smaller than 2.5 acres, but we'll have more impact on neighbors and allowing it on the larger lots. Some people have requested that we postpone these text amendments until the next Board of Commissioners is seated. But we've had all these town halls with these commissioners, and if we were to postpone to the new commissioners, we'd have to do it all over again and start the process again. And I'm not sure that anything would end up much much differently. Other people have recommended postponing the decision until the state legislature has it all figured out. I think it'll be years before I have it all figured out. The only thing that I'm aware of right now the state legislature is considering revisiting is the fencing. And I hope they do, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous to require an 8-foot site obscuring fence or pot. But there's nothing that the county can do about that. And the text amendments regarding fencing in these proposed amendments, they are not specific to marijuana. They are simply clarifying if you do build a site obscuring fence for whatever reason, then you can't use junk cars or appliances or flammable stuff. And if the state should say you don't need a fence, or you don't need a site obscuring fence, or you can use a wire fence or whatever, that's not going to affect these text amendments. These text amendments, if someone chooses a site obscuring fence, then these amendments would still apply. If they choose not to, then it wouldn't apply again anyway. So I don't see an issue with that. In terms of setbacks, the setbacks that somebody mentioned sounded arbitrary last week. When I first read them, I thought that sounded arbitrary too, so I looked up our existing code, and the setbacks are actually the same setbacks that already exist in the code in these zones for structures or engineered fences today. So it's just applying the same setbacks that exist today. I don't know where they came from. Maybe they were arbitrary originally, but this is simply saying that the same setbacks apply to marijuana grows as to anything else in this same zone. So I find that it is reasonable and consistent with county goals to allow marijuana grows on rural residential 5-acre, in lots of 2.5 acres or more. I also find that it is reasonable to restrict commercial grows to lots of greater than 2.5 acres. I find setbacks are a consistent extension of our current code for setbacks, simply applying existing setbacks to marijuana grows. I find that the requirements regarding shielding of light from neighboring properties and the sky are reasonable and appropriate and consistent with residential zoning. We already have these same requirements in place for your parking area, that you can't have light that's shining over onto your neighbor's property. So this is something that we already do, and I think that if my neighbor had lights on all night and was shining in my bedroom, I wouldn't be particularly happy. That would affect my quality of life. And since this is something already in the code, it's a technology that exists and is reasonable and is used every day, I don't think it's unreasonable to apply that also to marijuana grows. I find that the requirements to prevent runoff from fill piles and to use or remove them in 30 days is also consistent with state and county goals and does not present a hardship to the grower. And regarding setbacks, Shane Christian, who is a grower himself, said that these setbacks that we're requiring in the zone are actually very reasonable. I find the requirements regarding site obscuring fences consistent with state law and state and county goals. Since these requirements are not specific to marijuana growth, changes in state law will not affect them. I hope that the state law changes and that they're not required, but that won't affect these test amendments. I do have a concern with only requiring odor mitigation for indoor growth between 2.5 and 5 acres. This might have the unintended consequence of encouraging more people to grow outdoors who might otherwise grow indoors. And if you're growing outdoors, there is no way to mitigate the odor. And I think that if you're growing outdoors, there's probably more odor than if you're growing indoors. So I'm not sure that this text amendment would accomplish the goal that we're looking for in terms of actually reducing odor overall. Regarding sound mitigations, saying that only the sound of a fan can be heard at night does seem a little odd. I would prefer sound mitigations to be based on a decibel level of the property line, but I think that would probably place more of a burden of proof on the growers than just setting a fan. And because the enforcement is complaint-based, then I think, you know, if somebody was doing something that wasn't louder than a fan, but it wasn't a fan, it's unlikely that the neighbors would complain unless it actually disturbed them. And so, and because people do have the right to the peaceful enjoyment of their own property, that's amazing property, I don't think that this is onerous. And I don't think that if somebody was doing something that wasn't particularly loud, I don't think that it's likely that anybody would complain about that. It wasn't out of the fan. So my recommendation, apparently I'm the only one who would recommend this, but my recommendation is that I do find that these ordinances are reasonable and consistent with state and county rules, other than the exceptions that I mentioned, the odor control, and that I think that the CAC text amendment and the code enforcement text amendment should be separated out and should have a separate hearing to deal with those. Any further questions or discussions from the commission? Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you. I would like to voice my support for the idea of these, I think it's that CAC stands for Community Advisory Council.
Yes.
I spoke with someone today in Williams who told me that the Williams CAC has already been very helpful to neighbors in that the downtown Williams area to find a way to start talking to each other. I think that it would be excellent if the county would take on a separate hearing for the Williams CAC and then replicate that and invite the people of these different communities. Maybe they need a little encouragement or support, but as a person from the South County, I can tell you that for a long time it felt like there was no way to communicate with the county. And I think a CAC, some kind of council structure at the level of community, could be a great help to facilitate the kind of good neighbor policies that we would really like to see characterize our Josephine County culture. I think we're all horrified by the bad neighbors who moved in recently with the guns and dogs, scary. And I'm so supportive of this. So I would like to voice my support for holding that separate hearing first for Williams with the intent to implement this, create such an opportunity for other communities as well. I think that the code enforcement also, I agree, that is such an important topic. I would be very glad to see us hold a separate hearing to look at that topic, independent of this, since it does span a wider spectrum. I find myself torn because I can agree with both sides of this dilemma. This is not a simple issue. And I agree with, I also want to say to Ms. Meltzer, thank you so much for the excellent work that you've done to bring this to our attention. It's clearly a very diligent effort on your part and a very high quality work. Your professionalism is much appreciated.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. Any further comments or discussion from the commissions? Commissioner Church.
Margaret, when I was listening to your findings, and by the way, a very good job on that, you didn't mention the camping one. Did you have, or did I just miss that?
The camping one apparently was overruled by the state. They said that you can't have these camping regulations because they violate the state one. So that, I believe, am I correct that that was struck from the text amendments?
Yes.
Yes, please approach the podium.
All of them? So.
Yes, they struck all.
Yeah, it was all struck.
About the dogs.
How come they're still in the definitions?
Because I believe that's because this was printed up before the state amendment. But please address that.
I knew that most of the regulations were struck, but I was looking at the definitions. Okay,
so as you know, the county has this rule that says you can camp up to 4 months on a property. And we've been having issues with the farm guards basically exceeding that, and multiple campers, and sometimes there's issues with the septic and things of that nature. So I had proposed that the camping be allowed to be extended to 9 months if you had a waiver and if you met certain criteria. And that is what went out in the packet. And shortly after the packet went out, DLCD got back to us and said, no, Julie, no 9 months. Your 4 months is wrong. Statutes limit you to 30 days in those zones. So when I was here last week, I told you about that DLCD correction. that said it's a 30-day limit. They did say in the definition, though, they did say the definition of a campground was one unit or more, so that correction was made at the hearing as well. Since the hearing, and I'm not sure if you want me to go into this right now, but I did ask them if they would provide any leniency to the state, to their rules at all, to give us anything. And I explained to them the problems that we're having with the campers being out there, and, you know, if you don't have regulation, you're going to have five campers out there, there's neighborhood complaints, etc. They did agree, and I have a copy of the letter that I wrote DLCD right here, it was on November 1st. They did agree to work with us, and they did say, basically everything you have in front of us, they did agree that they would approve of a camper to be out there 4 months, provided they had to meet that criteria, and provided they had a waiver. Aside from that, if we don't, so that's what they're willing to give us right now. And aside from that, we would just be sticking with the 30-day maximum in those farm and forest zones.
Is that consistent with the definition that's being proposed here?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, any further questions for Ms. Nelson? Yes, Commissioner Gardner. Commissioner Richardson, sorry.
Yeah, I need to understand what a guest house is. It is mentioned in 61.020. that it says that we can have guest houses on rural residential.
Okay, that's...
What does that mean?
Okay, so that's... Guest houses are an interesting thing. They're not actually part of this discussion. You know, they weren't part of our amendment process.
The reason that I think they are is people have... I would want to know, at what point can you call your camper a guest house?
Okay.
Because I do know of circumstances, having done the Lifeline Lebens, where they're being used as auxiliary dwelling units for our granny flats or any host of, and for their teenage children, they are adjacent to a house on rural residential, and as far as I can tell, they're permanent.
Okay, so there's a lot to go into that answer. So the county has, in the past, allowed guest houses. It's in our code. And about 2 months ago, DLCD said, no, you cannot have a guest house in your code. You must stop immediately. So we stopped issuing permits for, the code even says you can have guest houses, but the state is like, no, you cannot. So we basically said, that's it, effective ASAP. We are no longer allowing guest houses. You will be seeing amendments come forward. My next group of amendments will address housing and housing issues. Just a little insight, the next one will address agritourism and agritourism issues. But so the next one will be guest houses, and you'll actually see that the proposals actually strike it from the language, since the state has said, no, that's not a legal use in the state of Oregon. Now let's take that a step further, though, to where you're seeing these next to homes, and perhaps they're a camper. What you're seeing there is a medical hardship case. So if you have, mother is ill and I need to be close by and take care of her, you can get a medical hardship permit to actually place a camper or mobile home, etc., on that same lot for a limited period of time to take care of her. One of the problems we're having with that whole medical hardship program is they don't disappear. Once they're there. So our new code enforcement administrator has been keeping a log of all the cases that she needs to follow up on, and we're basically going to be doing a clean sweep of the illegal medical hardships that are out there to try and get that cleaned up as well. But as far as guest houses in general, just the term guest house, not allowed by state, and our code is going to have to be amended to reflect that. We do have a legal interpretation from our attorney that says, regardless, even if our code says it, if the state says no, it's no. So there are no guest houses at this point. No new guest houses at this point.
Thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Spelzer while she is at the podium?
Then is that the same thing for farm use shall not interfere with the adjoining residential properties? We keep saying over and over and over again that farm use is permitted, but we're very clear that it cannot interfere with the adjoining properties. And I think that's the basis under which most of these complaints are heard, in that it is interfering. And there is also a concern, I had occasion to chat with a water master who happens to be on the park, but not a water master, he's in the Soil and Water Conservation District. They are very concerned that these, quote, commercial grows are being done on domestic wells, not on water rights. And there's a fundamental flaw in that. So we keep coming back to, is rural residential the right place? Maybe we need another descriptor for 5-acre tracts that are not rural residential and are not farm reserve, 40 acres or better.
Well, I can't address the water issue. Of course, that's beyond the scope. I can tell you, as far as numbers, what's on rural residential, and today I was running the numbers on how many people live on there. You know, that whole idea what you had said about should a home be there. How many people live on the property where the license is, how many are out of the area, things of that nature. But as far as the water, we don't touch that. That has to be a solution.
Did you come up with an answer on how many lots are available in the rural residential and what percentage of them are vacant and how many of them are being used? Because there's obvious the long term, if we have to maintain per state statutes 20-year buildable land inventory, if we convert all that land to marijuana grows, it's not going to be available for housing, and the next thing you know, we're going to be asking for farm reserve or forest land to be converted to housing. That's my real concern here.
Sure, Commissioner Richardson, I do recall you asking me to figure that out, and I have to admit, I don't fall on that. I did not calculate it. It's one that we'd have to work with GEIS to say how many lots are zoned RR5, how many are vacant. They'd have to run some data on that, which I can do. And even aside from this, we will do for the housing issues or the housing meetings that we have coming up. We do know that there's plenty of RR5 land. And I just say that because we recently had a meeting to discuss the Southwest Oregon Regional Pilot Program, the SORP project. And people that worked on that worked on years back getting the county to have so much land designated RR5 talked about the abundance of RR5 that we have. Do I know how long that will last? How many lots there are based on the population projections and stuff? I do not. I know we're looking at, you know, about 100 units a year that we need to create in the unincorporated areas. So we would have to run the numbers, though.
If we are requiring a house, what kind of a house do we require?
Well, it has to meet the definition of dwelling. To give you an example, we a tiny home, those tiny homes that you see, even that qualifies as a single-family dwelling in Josephine County.
If it has sewer...
It would have to have potable water and an approved septic system and an access permit, and it would have to pass building safety approval as far as being a habitable structure and meeting state code.
And there's all kinds of requirements for a dwelling that it would have to...
The thing that bothers me is that's a requirement on... That's a requirement on marijuana growers that does not exist on a corn farmer. But they have to have a house on their property. And it seems like that's just one more of those things that is a cost without a benefit. Fences, I sort of understand. Requiring them to build a house is an interesting way to get them to build a septic system.
Well, you are correct that we do not require that of corn farmers. This is another one of those things where the state says you can, so then, you know, you come up with... We've had a lot of complaints. Some of the complaints we receive are people complaining because nobody lives there. You know, you have these outsiders coming in or people staying in campers, and, you know, they're not respectful of the neighborhood, things of that nature. And that is why that's proposed. But you're right, you do not impose that on any other crop.
Commissioner Church.
This is great. Okay. I was not going to ask this question, but I've been thinking about it, and I think I will kind of ask it, because it's come up. In the past, and I know you're fairly new here, Julissa,
sure.
You may not have the answer. What sort of uses have interfered with adjoining residential properties under the code? It's kind of a, it says, farm use shall not interfere. Well, what does that mean? Has the definition of the word interfere ever come up in code enforcement or in legal?
I can't speak about Josephine County, you know, but I can go back my experience. Usually when, so I'm from Wisconsin, and that's a big dairy state. So a lot of times when you see interfere or you see cases involving interfere, it ends up being things such as the manure being, when they spread the manure on the fields, it goes over the property line onto the neighbor's property. Or you'll see that affiliated with health issues where they're actually now spreading the manure onto the neighbor's garden or over their well casing, things of that nature. So,
what if you're just smelling the manure? I live across from a dairy farm, and I knew that when I bought the property. It wasn't a big surprise, and I oftentimes get a lot of odor. But
right.
I figure that's just either I made a mistake, but I don't look at it that way. I like where I live. But, you know, I have people live next to big farms and that sort of thing, and
sure.
I don't know. I mean, how do you decide those kind of questions?
Right, so we go back to, and we talked a little bit about that last week, we go back to the intended use of the zone and then Oregon's right to farm law. So, you know, when you are in a residential zone, the purpose of that zone, the primary purpose is residential, agriculture is secondary. When you're in an agricultural zone, farming or agriculture is your primary, the residence is considered secondary.
Well, I'm in a rural residential, but I happen to abut. I mean, the dairy farm is not a residence, it's farm. But so that's an interesting concept, too.
Right, so then we look at, you know, if the intent of that zone is agriculture, we look very strictly at the right to farm laws, and a lot of people do not like that, but the laws are out there that says if it's a farm, if it's intended for agriculture, you know, it's protected through those right to farm laws, and it does become very subjective on what one person thinks smells good versus what is offensive to another person.
Do they say anything about who came first? For example, that dairy farm's been there for a very long time.
Dairy farm is a bad example.
Well, but even so, it's realistic. Those of us who moved into rural residential accepted the status quo of the location where we moved. Now, all of a sudden, a commercial enterprise is moving into that rural residential zone, and it is disrupting the quality of what we have come to expect. And I keep going back to that. Does it, in fact, interfere with the use of the adjoining residential property? And people who live in those areas will say, absolutely. The tacky-ass fences, all the other stuff, the transients, the people coming in, are changing their neighborhood in a way that's not covered by code.
Well, if you want a response to that, I guess I would say, it is subjective. You know, some neighbors find what's going on offensive and some do not. Our goal is to try and find, you know, we look back at that purpose of zoning and we try to find that balance and protect the public health and safety and do the orderly development and things of that nature. So that's where we look at the proposal and say, we're not gonna make everybody happy, but how can we get to that happy medium we can?
Commissioner Gardner, thank you. I am really quite sympathetic to wanting to protect our rural character, our lands, and I feel like the text, I ask, does this code change accomplish what we hope it will? And I'd say it could. Recognizing that people have the right to use their property, it seems to me that commercial recreational marijuana, this is why I'm asking us to see the difference, I have a problem with this industrial stuff that somehow gets pesticides in it. It has no place in human lungs. I think we agree on that. So I actually am quite supportive of the intent here to encourage good neighbor behavior in our residential zones. And I don't see how we can do it without engaging somehow at the local level. We have got to start having people talk more to their neighbors and less complaining to the planning commission. So I'd love to see us have another something to offer about facilitating dialogue. I'm going to just try this on for size, okay? But try to bear with me. What if county planning could come up with a proposed way to deal with conflicts by reaching for mediation, alternative dispute resolution services to try to help when these people move in from Pennsylvania, from Tennessee, from California, they don't know where they are. I gotta tell you, I know lots of them. I meet them all the time. This is wherever you come from in the world, Josephine County is not like that. So what if we could have a more proactive approach to say, where conflicts arise, could we have faces and feet on the ground? We love volunteers in this county. Here would be an excellent place to say, in addition to trying to regulate it from a land use code perspective, I'd also like to see the county put some substance into taking this potential for conflict seriously by addressing it through mediation early on, rather than letting disputes arise. I would love to see us take on a policy. We want good neighbors in this county. And we're not just saying that. Here's a whole host of things. Welcome, Josephine County. Here's our list of how to be a good neighbor. I mean it. You want to do business here? We'd love to see you if you want to be a good neighbor. And here's all the things that we can do to encourage at the neighbor level. So there's some sociology in here that is pretty hard to legislate for. But I think we could have policy to support. For example, what if we called it the Josephine County Good Neighbor Policy? I'm quite serious. And then when things break down, what if we have a policy to say we're going to try mediating these conflicts before they get to court? Maybe we don't need more jail beds. Maybe we need more mediators. That would go a long way toward actually engaging public safety beyond law enforcement. When you're a good neighbor, you're not just enforcing the law, you're actually increasing public safety, and that's the kind of thing I think we can afford. So I want to ask if there's some way to, I don't mean that this work is incomplete, I'm actually quite impressed, Julie, with the huge amount of effort that has gone into this, most of which I find quite helpful. I'm puzzled about how to deal with the private property rights aspect, and I want to be respectful of that, and I also respect the need to regulate these commercial recreational roads in small neighborhoods. So, this is hard.
I can try and comment or address some of that I've seen. So at the community advisory committees, or citizen advisory committees that we have, there were many. You know, there was one probably in every community, and we're down to one right now. We're down to the Williams one. And I'm really hoping that the other ones get started up again, because I think there's value there. I will admit, it sounds, in talking to these groups, it sounds like the county has not been very responsive to some of their needs. I think part of that is the fact that we've had such turnover. Admittedly, Josephine County is not an easy place to work, so I can understand why you have some of the turnover you have. But, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, and people, they are engaged, so I'm hoping we can get some more of those going. I'll use Williams as a good example. They have done just that as a CAC. They have sat down with the neighbors, and they've talked about neighborly things and tried to resolve some of their issues as a community. They've also talked about they throw out the idea about, you know, some little flyer or something, you know, young people that say, this is what it's like to live in the Williams area, so people understand the neighborhood and the culture they're getting into. And that may be one of the best ways we can address it. But I would hope that we could get more CACs going and have more of that open dialogue, because I think when you're sitting peer-to-peer with your neighbor, I think we have a better chance for success than if it's the county or a mediator coming in and telling them, you know, trying to work through that process. But sometimes that may be the only way to go, is through the mediator. We do have one right now where they've tried sitting down with the neighbors, and it just they hit a roadblock. And is there anything the county can do legally? No. Is it in our code? No. Did I offer to sit down and see if we could make headway? Yes. Because to me, it's important that we continue to be a neighborhood and function as a cohesive community. So there is some of that opportunity. We're doing what we can do, but there's got to be a lot more we can do. I agree.
Thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Meltzer? All right, thank you very much. Any further discussion or deliberation? Right, at this time, we will take a 5-minute recess, during which time somebody should prepare a motion, or you can all prepare motions, because we're all over the board on this, and any given motion is likely to fail, it seems to me. So, you know, as many of you as want to, please prepare a motion, write your motion down, because write it legibly, because I will have to repeat it, and our secretary will have to record it. So we will now take a 5-minute break. Well, let's take a 7-minute break. It is now 7:13, and we will reconvene at 7:20.
You built bridges where bridges didn't exist.
How is your response?
You pave that way for the future.
Yeah.